Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
He got him
in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Whoa.
He flicks a mitten. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big.
He's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast right here on Radio Influence. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, as always, joined by Daniel Galvan. Daniel, how's it going, man?
Jason, I am hot and heavy, and I am ready to dig into these fights because midway through, watching, 20-some fights out of Bellator, out of UFC, I almost felt overwhelmed. But as soon as it was all over, I tell you what, there really was not a single fight of the night type caliber contest that I was super stoked about watching. But there was a lot of interesting storylines taking place and whatnot. So I am eager to talk about what we just witnessed this weekend, Jason.
I think it was a good weekend for the UFC. You know, if you're thinking long term, you know, Brian Ortega, Mackenzie Dern, Sean O'Malley, there are three fighters that if you watched all the episodes of Embedded last week, that the UFC was really going out of their way to promote those three fighters. So I think all in all, it was a pretty good Saturday night in Las Vegas last weekend.
Yeah, even like if we want to dig deep on the UFC card. And also, I'll just, before I dig deep on the UFC card, I just want to mention even Bellator had a real positive result on the main event with Darian Caldwell. Obviously, we'll dig into that, but I just want to make a note in saying he came across like a superstar. But digging deep on UFC, you go on that second layer of maybe guys who obviously aren't stars today or tomorrow, but could be one day. You look at the performance we saw out of Alexander Hernandez, who was the biggest underdog on the card. Obviously, he didn't start that fight super classy with the front kick to the face to Benil Dariush, but the way he knocked him out and how quickly he did it against such a heavy favorite in Dariush, I think Alexander Hernandez isn't going to be the first name you think of when you look back at what happened at UFC 222. But at lightweight, this is a fighter that I had no expectation of going in, and this guy looked like a straight-up beast at lightweight. So I just want to make a mention of him that – obviously, the storylines is what transpired on the main card, but there were even some fighters on the undercard where there was quite a bit of progression. Him, Zach Otto finishing Mike Pyle, and at light heavyweight, Jordan Johnson was able to utilize his clinch game in a real barn burner. In that, I kind of wanted to burn the barn after one because the fight wasn't super great. But and Cody Stamann, who you got on the podcast. Yes. He also really improved his stock at bantamweight.
And people will hear that interview here in a little bit. Cody Stamann recapping his win over Brian Caraway. And also, he's going to tell you who he wants to fight next. And it's a name that seems to be a popular name that's being thrown out there. Also, coming up here on this week's edition of the podcast, going to talk to Lindsey Jones, undefeated 170-pound fighter out of American Top Team down in Coconut Creek. He is going to be in the main event of Valor 48 in a title eliminator matchup in the welterweight division. So we'll talk to him. Plus, we'll get into everything that happened in MMA last weekend. Plus, we'll talk about some fight bookings and some other things going on in the world of MMA. Plus, answer listener questions that were submitted either by email or by social media. I will tell you this. I had all intentions of staying up Friday to watch Bellator 195 and was on the fence of how much of UFC 222 I was going to take in live, but got caught a little bit of a cold last Friday, and I made it through the first matchup in the Bellator card of Juan Archuleta's dominating victory where he scored the first 30-23 scorecard in Bellator history. But I remember they were getting ready to start up Edwin Dakota and Christina Williams. And then, yeah, I just passed out on the couch and ended up watching the rest of this card via DVR. And, of course, watched all of the UFC via DVR as well. I'll tell you a little funny story. I live in South Tampa, in Tampa, Florida. And I live in a very quiet community, Daniel, very quiet. I live in a circular street, so pretty much if you're coming in my neighborhood, you have a reason to be here. Friday afternoon, I'm starting to write my UFC preview column, and I had the blinds open in my office, in my home office. I look out, and I see a Tampa Police Department SUV just fling around my circle, lights on, gets out. All I hear is a massive boom. I'm like, uh-oh, what is going on? Not too often that you see the SWAT department roll into the neighborhood. That made my Friday very interesting, Daniel.
Okay, so what was your response? Did you come out in your Affliction shirt like, let me bang, bro, I'm ready to go? Like, what happened in your neighborhood, you know?
I found the person they arrested, and it was basically, it sounded like a failure to appear in court, which I'm like, hold on, you are not bringing the SWAT department in for failure to appear for a court date. And I can tell you that house is probably, I want to say, the only house in our circle that the owner doesn't live in. It's a house that's rented. No one has been in or out of that house. I mean, there was a forensic unit van here. I mean, it was one of those things of, I'm like, okay, I'm staying in my house because I have no clue what's going on here. And then kind of all the neighbors started kind of, you know, walking out of the house, kind of looking around like, okay, what's going on here? First time I've ever seen a SWAT, two SWAT vehicles roll into my neighborhood.
Wait, I'm a big wrestling fan, and there was a wrestler arrested, Sonny, Tammy Sitch, for failing to appear in court. Is that who your neighbor is?
No, it was not her. That would have been even though I do live in a town that is, we do have a lot of wrestlers that live here, but no, it was, I saw the mugshot and, didn't recognize the person at all.
Wow. What was he charged with? Or she charged with
it. It was a he. It was he. It just, and obviously they have some type of record, but I have no idea. Crazy. I have no idea, Dave. I don't ask a lot of questions, man.
Wow. Look at you working under stress, putting together a UFC 222 preview. I mean, I guess a big part of your preview was you gauge the interest of people when it comes to actually purchasing that pay-per-view, UFC 222. And obviously this was a main event that was scrapped together after the Max Holloway injury. I know it's real hard to measure. We're like a few days out, and obviously the numbers that we eventually get aren't even official, right? They're probably as close as we can get, but we're real close. Anyways, my question is, when you look at what you wrote about in your preview versus what your sense was of the saturation of people talking about these fights, did it kind of match up?
You know, I was shocked by the amount of response I got to just, you know, somebody just, I thought I would get like, you know, 10, 15, 20 responses. I think I ended up getting like 55 responses. One of them actually was from Scott Holtzman, who said, yeah, he was going to be purchasing this pay-per-view. I think one of the things is it shows Chris Cyborg definitely has a draw, no matter who is standing across the cage from her. I think there was also interest in O'Malley and Sukumthal. Can O'Malley continue that rise? But clearly the overwhelming response was, I'm buying this pay-per-view because of the co-main event. And that was a fight that if I was going to actually be up at 10 o'clock on Saturday night, not laying in my bed trying to feel a little better, if I was ultimately going to fork over $65, it was because of that. And I wrote that in my piece. Like, if you're asking reasons why that you should fork over that money, it was because of Brian Ortega and Frankie Edgar. And I wrote this in my piece. I said, you know, MMA media loves to write these stories of X reasons to watch. I would love to see someone write a piece, X reasons to why you should pay $65 to watch this UFC pay-per-view, because it just was a pay-per-view that it wasn't sexy as a premium fight card. Overall, I thought it was a very good fight card. I think if it had been on Fox, I think people would have been much more excited about it. I was surprised by the amount of responses I got. But it was very mixed. It wasn't like, you know, 80% like, no, I'm not buying it. I would say it was about 50-50.
Wow, that's interesting, because I think when we look back at this year, Jason, we're only in the very beginning moments of March, but I will say that I think once you stack up all the main cards we get out of UFC pay-per-views, there's a good chance UFC 222 is in the top half of quality. I would assume. That is my best guess. It does not have the main event that maybe some of them below, but we've already seen some of these one fight cards. So this is a bit better offering than some of the more recent pay-per-views that we've gotten. Is kind of what I would say, with the caveat being that obviously Yana Kunitskaya presented a much weaker challenger than what we're getting out of there. But I really did think we had a solid main card, and it was the Edgar Ortega fight to me. That was that marquee matchup, especially as someone who really understands that Frankie Edgar almost holds an imaginary featherweight championship where it's like the breakout contender championship where you beat him and you're a breakout contender. And he dropped the belt to Brian Ortega. And I thought that fight really delivered. It wasn't a great fight because it was a dominant performance out of Ortega. And I think when you're buying pay-per-views, you're buying for great fights and great moments. I think there was only one great fight on the entire main card, the bout between O'Malley and Sukmenthal, but that also provided a great moment, and I did think the top two fights provided great moments with Cyborg's dominance and of course, Brian Ortega. I think he's the star of the entire card because that exam, that Frankie Edgar exam, it's one of the hardest exams you'll have in all of MMA. It's like the equivalent to what those people pass to get out of law school at the bar exam. That's what Edgar is, and the way Ortega passed that exam is pretty damn impressive. It's like he filled out the Scantron with crayons, because you think of what he does well, it's survive and it's tap guys out in the third round. What did he do against Frankie Edgar? He knocked him out. He won the entire fight standing. I don't know if that is going to be the game plan to get someone as good as Max Holloway on the feet. But listen, if you had told me heading into this contest Ortega was going to come out here, stand and trade with Edgar and knock him out, I would have called you absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things I want to mention about Frankie Edgar. I mean, first, you have to note that it is the first time he's lost by stoppage in his career, and only the second loss in his career in a non-title fight. The other one came back April 2nd, 2008, against Gray Maynard, back a fight night card, Florian and Lazone. And one of the things that I've seen some people talk about is, oh, does this fight mean Frankie Edgar's chin is gone? I mean, I think that a majority of the people, if they would have got hit by what Frankie Edgar got hit with, they would have been knocked out as well. But, you know, Frankie, I mean, one of the things you have to note is he is 36 years old. Will he get back to the a title contention? You know, time will tell if that's going to happen. It wouldn't shock me if he does. You know, I think one of my big takeaways from watching that fight is, I mean, it looked like two guys in two different weight classes. It almost looked like you had a guy that was a 35er fighting a guy who was a 55er. And I'm not saying that Frankie should move down to 135. I know people have mentioned that. That's ultimately his decision, but you know, for as undersized as he is, even at 145 pounds, the guy is still the third best 145-pound fighter in the world.
He is, and the crazy thing is you watch that fight, and Ortega does look like he dwarfs Frankie Edgar. And what's crazy is just looking at the reach of the two is that Ortega's reach is only about 1 inch bigger than Edgar's. And according to just straight up Google, he's only 2 inches taller. But he looked a lot bigger than what I just laid out there. I mean, on paper, they're virtually identical with their reach. But it just seemed like the size of Ortega was just one additional problem that Edgar had to grapple with, in addition to the skill set of his opponent. So that was also something that really stuck out to me. I don't know how what we're talking about on paper when it comes to only a 2-inch height advantage, 2-inch reach advantage, how that translated to what we actually saw, because to me, Ortega looked bigger than that. And it's impossible for us to make a verdict on whether or not Edgar is past his prime, because as of press time, he's only lost in his entire career to Benson Henderson, Gray Maynard, and now Brian Ortega. So it's the one time he's been finished. And like you mentioned, you have a fighter that's moving forward all that momentum moving forward, and he gets caught with a short elbow like that, that's going to drop everybody, except for, you know, some of your insane chin guys. But I just thought your insane chin guys like Uriah Faber, butt chin. I hope Edgar returns to form, Jason, just because I really would like to see Frankie Edgar take on Max Holloway. I just am sentimental about that fight. That fight to me is a great fight historically, because there's a good chance Max Holloway is the next great featherweight, and he's going to have a tough challenge in his next title defense in Ortega. But I do personally hope that Edgar does return a top and get that shot. And again, if you do look at the rest of the top 15, the fighters hovering around Edgar, I think Edgar would have plenty of success against Cub Swanson, against Ricardo Lamas, against Josh Emmett, and against Jeremy Stevens. So I honestly don't feel too worried about him moving forward. The only big if for Frankie Edgar is if he has aged overnight, but that's not something we're going to be able to figure out until his next fight.
And I know he talked about leading up to this that he wanted to fight on the Atlantic City show. I hope that they're not still thinking that. I know his medical suspension is through April the 18th. That fight card's on April 21st, so hopefully the UFC will not put him on that fight card. You know, I will say this. I mean, I would love to see Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar, but I would say that Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega is my number two fight I'm most excited for that is currently booked in all of MMA.
So obviously one is the one we're going to get next on pay-per-view, right? Ferguson, yes. Nurmagomedov. That's a good question. Best fight currently booked. Man, I don't even know if I can come up. What's number two? I mean, not other than Max Holloway Ortega. If I was going to be a Skip Bayless on First Take and I was going to debate you, Jason, what else is there?
I mean, I could see maybe someone says Stipe Miocic, Daniel Cormier, just because of, you know, two champions fighting each other. I mean, Poirier-Gaethje is a fight that I think will be, you know, very, very exciting to watch. I mean, outside of that, I just don't think, but I just think of fights that I think no matter what I am doing, I am going to make sure to watch that. I mean, I'll tell you. UFC 223, I really don't care what the rest of the pay-per-view is, because you're getting me to that pay-per-view for Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov. That is why I am paying $65. You know, whenever you put Max Holloway and Brian Ortega, and it sounds like the UFC wants to do it at UFC 227 in Hawaii, but negotiations have stalled there. They're actually looking to do that at Aloha Stadium, you know, which, I mean, to me, it obviously makes all the sense in the world to have Max Holloway headline a card in Hawaii. You know, I just, when you talk, you know, fights that just get me excited to watch, they're by far, it's almost a 1A, 1B for me between those two fights.
Man, you know, okay, so those are the three fights. Those are the three fights that are quote-unquote super fights. They really aren't super fights, but they're damn great fights. The DC, Stipe, the Nurmagomedov, Ferguson, Ortega, Holloway. Obviously, whenever we have events, that's when we say hyperbole. But currently, I would say Ortega, Holloway is the matchup I'm looking forward to the most. Just because I think that one has potential to be – that one's more likely to be the most entertaining. I think that one is just like it could be so compelling on the feet, so compelling on the ground. Both these guys are incredibly exciting. This will probably be the first of three fights these two will have at featherweight. I would not be shocked. So I would make the case that even though Ortega Holloway is the fight that will do the least amount of business on pay-per-view, I actually am looking forward to it the most. But if they do it in Hawaii, I guess this is the time I'm going to pitch you my stupid idea. All right, this is Daniel's stupid fight making idea. I don't know if this is going to be a recurring segment, but the way I'm doing this, Jason, is like this. This is a fight booking I thought of in my head, and I admit that it's kind of stupid, so I don't want to be criticized once I say it, but I also kind of think it's a good idea. Are you ready?
Oh god.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay, it's going to be in Hawaii. It's going to be at UFC 227 or whatever they do it. It's going to be a welterweight contest, BJ Penn against Sage Northcutt.
Oh, God.
That's a genius fight. Genius fight. That's genius, Jason. Baby J Penn against baby Sage.
Look, if you go to Hawaii, I and you know BJ's, they're going to try to put BJ on that card in some way.
make a star out of Northcutt against a really, really, really past his prime BJ Penn. I think that's a great fight. I could be wrong. I could be so wrong. I think that's a great fight. I think that's straight out of Scott Coker's playbook, and we got to run it. So there's that, and then my second option was John Jones versus Brock Lesnar, and we just do it in North Korea.
Oh, come on. Isn't Brock John Jones headline WrestleMania?
No, because WWE has strict drug testing. We're gonna find a country with a really bad – we're going to find a country with no athletic department and just run that fight. Would there be any repercussions for the UFC, Jason, if they ran a fight, an unsanctioned pay-per-view somewhere?
They would have issues, yes.
Oh, damn. Okay. Oh, maybe just make up another promotion name to get the heat off. But anyways, Sage BJ is my crazy idea. I thought of it when they showed BJ Penn in the crowd. Because when they show BJ Penn in the crowd, all I could think is, holy crap, you're going to give this guy another fight again. He's lost like 9 in a row.
Oh, yeah.
So anyways, that's my idea. That's my idea.
In terms of fights that could get you excited in the way of Ortega, Holloway, Khabib, Tony. Is Chris Cyborg versus Amanda Nunes in that conversation?
Uh-huh. 100%. Because we are Chris Cyborg is just a phenomenal, phenomenal heel in the pro wrestling business. And what does that mean? That means I think there's a big portion of people that look at her like a pro wrestling heel that is so dominant. And they really are looking for a challenge against this dominant, dominant heel. And, I think that is the most compelling story you can tell right now in the UFC is this unbeatable force in Cyborg. Find a worthy challenger. And I think Amanda Nunes is more than a worthy challenger. So Chris Cyborg is just one of the most compelling characters this promotion has. And the way you tell a great story is you convince people that she can lose. Because the way she just demolished Yana Kunitskaya was just – unbelievable. I mean, it was like she allowed Kunitskaya to be the babyface and get over with the crowd for about 1.5 minutes with her clinch work and her takedown. And I felt like the place was going kind of crazy, or maybe I was just hyperventilating. So I'm like, what is happening? Yana is winning this fight. Cyborg gets up and just dismantles her. After a few combinations, Jason, I was feeling bad for a professional fighter. Rarely do I think about it like that, but I was watching this and I was like, God, end this fight already. I know it's only been one strike on the feet and Yana's standing tall, but Chris Cyborg is one of the best female fighters of all time. And Amanda Nunes is one of the best female fighters of all time as well. And I think that's a great fight. I think without question, Nunes Cyborg is what has to happen because it's a big fight and Nunes Pennington isn't.
Man, you got to feel bad for Raquel Pennington because she, when I watched Dana White's post fight press conference, that was my takeaway is that, sorry, Raquel, you're not getting the title shot next. With, you know, obviously she had the accident, which it took her out of a title fight. And, but you know, look, Cyborg Nunes, I think it is the right route to go there. I think the ultimate question, you know, when you talk, and I think this is in the Cyborg conversation, is at what point will we have a women's 145-pound fight that doesn't involve Chris Cyborg?
I think we will when Megan Anderson fights. If she fights. If she fights, I think that's
she has become the forgotten UFC fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you remember she was supposed to fight, or they were talking about having her fight Chris, what was that back, was that over a year ago?
It feels like it.
Yeah, or maybe like 9 months ago. I want to say it was like summer of last year. And, you know, and Megan has, you know, she's not talked about, and I don't think she ever is going to talk about exactly why she wasn't able to fight there. But yeah, I know she's mentioned about she wants to fight Chris. But you know, I think the proper promotional tactic for the UFC would be is put Megan on the same card that you have, you know, Cyborg and Nunes fight on. A, she becomes a backup plan just in case. And B, it can kind of help introduce Megan to the UFC fan.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's when we'll see the next fight. And the major question is what transpires once Cyborg retires with this division. And it really, I mean, the health of this division is really built on Cyborg having like a 7-year run here. Mm-hmm. Like if she holds the title for 7 more years, surely we will have a women's featherweight division. But let's say Cyborg drops it to Nunes. Cyborg drops her next fight and then she retires. We may not have a women's featherweight division, but if she's just champion for a long ass time, you know, we could be looking back at the women's featherweight division 25 years from now and say Chris Cyborg is the foundational piece for why this division exists. So obviously the division exists to promote Chris Cyborg fights. That's a smart business tactic because she is absolutely one of the biggest stars the promotion currently has. And I do think they should do a non-Cyborg fight. And the purpose of that is to build up contenders, build up challengers, not repeat the situation that took place in the main event where you have an unknown bantamweight and Kunitskaya getting the shot, which I give her credit for performing, for getting on there. And again, she her clinch work did look nice for about a minute. But this was just this was a matchup where on the commentary team, as soon as the fight was over, it was like they were apologizing for making the fight, and they were like defending Kunitskaya. They couldn't put Cyborg over. Like Cyborg wins the fight, and immediately it's all three, one at a time. All the commentators being like, "By the way, Kunitskaya took this fight on short notice. Oh, and she's a Invicta FC bantamweight champion. By the way, she fights at bantamweight. Oh, do you remember that 1 minute where she was good? Like that was it. They were so defensive, man. It was so hilarious. But I just wanted to mention that. And you know, while we're still on the topic of the woman title picture, if you just want to know what I think Raquel Pennington should do next, I think it's kind of obvious. I think her next fight should be against a Brazilian bantamweight. It's just it should be against Kaelin Vieira.
Yeah, I mean she gets to win there. I do want to mention Sean O'Malley, and you know, obviously, you know, you look at the rise of Sean, and I mentioned a little earlier, I thought the UFC did a great job of promoting him. I thought, you know, during the week, I thought there was a little disrespect to Andre Sukumthal. Like, it was like he was by the way, he's fighting Andre Sukumthal. Like, it was like, and I was sitting there like, man, the UFC has set themselves up here. And, you know, look, anyone who's seen the fight, you know, terrible fight IQ by Andre Sukumthal in the third round. I mean, if he just stands up, the ref probably comes in and stops the fight.
Look, I don't even know if terrible fight IQ does it justice, Jason. This was one of the biggest fighter gaffes I've ever seen because he had like an entire 3.5 minutes to figure it out. And it's as simple as you are right. If he stands up without delivering a single strike, there is a good chance after like 15 seconds the fight is called because Sean O'Malley was hopping on one leg. Let's say that doesn't happen. Andre is a real skilled fighter. He has to stand up to take out any fighter on one leg. This was such a big mistake because he was so clearly down by two rounds and he was fighting very aggressive to open the third frame. And it was like this was the difference between a winning paycheck and a losing paycheck, and all he had to do was stand up, and he was the one that was in control of the situation. And there was one moment where O'Malley did get back up to his foot, and I was like, Sean, why are you trying to get back up? Like he tried to get back up, and he did get back up and was immediately brought back down. And I was like having a panic attack for Sean O'Malley, and the worst thing for Sukumthal, and you do feel bad for him. Because obviously the second this fight is over, I mean, he knows he screwed up. You don't know what was going through his head because this was such an obvious mistake that it's hard to criticize a guy for it because obviously he wasn't aware or something. Because this, I can't process him being aware of what injury O'Malley had and then him pursuing this game plan. This was just a mental fart. And like it shows you that it's – when you're in the middle of a fight, sometimes it's just impossible to actually understand your corner or you're too tired to care because they were screaming at him. And
It's not the Andre that I know. I've always known Andre as this guy who, he's a stand-up guy, and just it was odd, watching that fight and watching after I knew what happened. It was interesting, but you know, I think that, you know, potentially, you know, who knows whether Sean O'Malley can become a star, but the guy has got the charisma. He's got the ability on the microphone. He has a very flashy fighting style. He has a fighting style that fans want to see, and it'll be interesting to see if they can develop him. You mentioned about Kaelin Vieira, and probably the fighter that really no one's talking about. You know, this is a fighter that's now 10-0 in her pro career. She's now 4-0 in the UFC. I mean, and she's right there in title contention.
Yeah, just to put a nip in the bud on the O'Malley-Sukmundal story, I just wanted to make a mention that I thought it was a phenomenal decision to have Joe Rogan interview O'Malley on his back.
Yeah.
Thought that was great. Moving on to Vieira Singano. Yeah, completely overshadowed. And this was a hell of a performance out of Kaelin Vieira. She fought a tough fighter in Kat Zingano, and she won decisively. I thought she just looked super confident in there and had a high degree of skills. And it was just, to me, it was a clear-cut dominant win for Kaelin Vieira. It was so dominant that you know how dominant you got to be to where you begin thinking about the career of an opponent? That's what it was here. It just felt like Zingano was not able to do much. In this fight, you know, through the first two frames. Obviously, in the third round, it was a clear win for Zingano. She won round three, but it almost felt like Vieira was letting her foot off the gas pedal a bit, because looking at those first two rounds, she came across as a fighter I'm real interested to dig into at women's bantamweight. But, I mean, let's talk about it. The biggest negative of this card was the scorecard for Zingano, 29-28. That's an insane scorecard by Marcos Rosales.
You would have thought it'd been Adelaide Byrd.
I thought it was, yeah, I really did. But I will say I also disagreed with him. He had another scorecard, 30-27 for Jordan Johnson. I mean, excuse me, for Adam Milstead over Jordan Johnson. And so I watched this fight. I thought Johnson clearly won rounds two and three. And I saw this scorecard. I'm like, oh my God, this is also a bad scorecard from Rosales. And well, I mean, I first off, I thought it was clear 29-28, but then I looked at MMA decisions and he did have five media members out of like 13 scored it for Milstead. So maybe I was wrong, but giving Milstead all three rounds to me came across as quite bad. And while we're continuing to talk about bad scorecards, I thought that 29-28 for Caraway was kind of questionable, as well as the one for Pedro Munhoz. That one I did not understand. Hell, you could even throw in the scorecard Bird actually did file for Ashley Yoder. But this one was above and beyond bad. Those first two rounds were so clearly for Vera.
I'm glad you mentioned the Caraway scorecard. And I'm gonna play my interview right now with Cody Stamen. We bring this up. I thought it was a clear 29-28 for Cody Stamen. And look, it comes down to that third round, and it's just because he won four of those 5 minutes in the final round. So I'm going to let you hear that my conversation with Cody Stamen right now, where we did talk about that. He talked about why he felt he won the fight. And so here's my conversation with Cody Stamen. Cody, man, as always, I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the victory. There's so many things to talk about this fight. I think the first round, the adversity you had to deal with there in the last 40 seconds, the awful position that you did find yourself in. Second round, clearly you won that. Third round, first 4 minutes of the round going well, then the last minute doesn't go well for you. You know, as you think about the things that you're most proud about, disappointed about in the fight, what really sticks out to you about the matchup?
So, I mean, biggest thing for me is just the toughness. You know what I mean? Like there were times in that fight where, you know, I was obviously down, I hadn't really been in a position like that in a really, really long time. Where, you know, after that first round, there was no doubt in my mind or anyone else's mind that I lost that round. You know, when I fought Duke and Watt, it was a lot closer, and any of those rounds, you know, that first round could have went either way. You know, but against Caraway, I was on bottom. He was in a dominant position, and that's not a place that I found myself in a lot of fights. You know, on my back, that's the only time I've ever been taken down in MMA. You know what I mean? So that's the first time I felt that adversity in the cage. And then to come back the second round and then beat him the way I did in that second round, you know, I was really happy with the way, you know, I responded, you know, having not been in that position before and not knowing exactly. I mean, I know personally, I know myself, and I know that, you know, you have to beat me with a 2x4 to get me to quit. But at the same time, you know, I've never actually been tested like that in a fight. So to have been there and to have made it through, you know, I felt really good about it.
This was a fight card that I was not able to watch live because I was a little bit under the weather. So as I was going back and watching your fight and, you know, and seeing the stats of the fight, made me kind of think about that the person who stops a bunch of takedowns doesn't get as much credit as for the one takedown that someone gets. And Brian was 1 for 23 in takedown attempts in this matchup. I mean, do you think that'll ever change where, you know, the person that's stopping all these takedowns, you know, does get credit for that?
I mean, maybe it should. The thing is, the thought of the takedown is like an offensive move. I feel like, you know, when you stop it, it'd be no different than blocking a punch. You know what I mean? Or slipping a punch. You know, if I cleanly slip a punch, am I being penalized for it? You know what I mean? Is Brian getting clout with the judges by just shooting on me continuously? You know, even though I'm stuffing every single shot, just him getting close enough to touch my legs, is that a good thing for him? You know, I don't really know how people see that stuff, and I've never really thought about that. That's a really good question.
And then, you know, looking at the scorecards, I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you. I scored the fight for you. I looked at the 4 minutes of what you did in that final round because the fight came down to a third round. There's no one's going to doubt that. But I did see that there was 15 MMA media members that scored the fight for MMADecisions.com. 11 of them had the fight for your opponent. What would you say to those people on why you won the fight?
I would say that, you know, I controlled that fight, you know, in the third round. I carried the third round, the entire third round, you know, absolutely. Like you said, 4 minutes of that third round. I've watched that fight probably 15 times now. And I'm sure that I won those first 4 minutes. No one could take those 4 minutes from me. And then the minute we'll say he did win, he really wasn't doing any damage. It was literally like I was on the cage. I was holding his hand. Every time he got his hand free, he would do one of these, like, you know, kind of overhand, you know, like the old school. It's not something that is like going to deter anyone. You know, we're MMA fighters, you know, hitting me while you're holding me isn't going to hurt me. And I was hitting him with some hard knees. And then at the very end of the fight, I took a shot, bad shot. He grabbed a guillotine, and we got in a scramble, and I landed on top. And he wasn't actually choking me. He was actually if you actually look, you know, his arm was over my head. So, you know, if there had been 30 seconds left in that fight, I would tell people that I would have ended up in his guard beating the hell out of him for those last 30 seconds because I wasn't getting choked. It was just a scramble. You know what I mean? And I landed on top. So I felt like, you know, even in that exchange, you know, I did win that scramble. You know, if that had been the first round, I would have felt like I definitely won that round.
That was actually my next question because I watched the last, you know, 30 seconds of the third round multiple times, and I could never really tell if he actually had the guillotine locked in. I mean, was it basically an arm in, essentially?
Yeah, I had an arm in, and at one point he did have it. When I initially took the shot and he initially sat back to the guillotine, that's why I rolled. That's why I rolled and let him come on top. And then I got a hold of his hand, got it under off my chin, and I came up on top. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do that had I not had hand control. And that's kind of like a real fine detail that you would only know if, you know, you do jiu-jitsu and you've been in those positions. You know that if you're getting your head choked off and you're on bottom, you're not going to just roll somebody over. You know what I mean? Like, especially if you're smart, you know, if I was in a position where I was compromised, being on my back would be the best place to be if he's trying to choke me. Cause you know, the leverage point isn't the same, you know, when you're on your back, as when, if I was in his guard, it'd be a lot easier for him to finish that choke. But I came on top knowing that I wasn't going to be choked. It was just kind of a weird scramble. And then, you know, then the fight was over. So no one really got to see how that was actually going to play out. But no, he wasn't choking me.
when you know Bruce Buffer's getting ready to announce the judges. Were you aware that Adelaide Bird was one of the judges refereeing your fight?
No. And I didn't really know who Adelaide Bird was until I went back and looked at it, and I was listening to Joe Rogan and Daniel Cormier kind of rip into her a little bit. It was pretty funny. I wasn't aware of that, but I know that she's pretty well known for making some real bad calls on a lot of different fights. And that's pretty terrifying that she's still back in there, you know, still judging. I feel like once you kind of are compromised as a judge, you should kind of just be like, okay, you need to find a new gig. That's just like one of those. This is one of those jobs that it's like it's based a lot on, you know, your integrity as a person. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like once people know that she's you know, calling fights, that she shouldn't be allowed back in there.
But you, the decision did go your way, split decision win. This has been a big rise for you over the last 9 months. You know, stepping into the UFC on, what was it, 10 days notice when you took on Terry and Ware. Now you're a top 10 guy, and I know you put something on your Instagram where you talked about, you know, kind of the haters who have doubted you throughout it. But as you think about your rise here in 9 months, another 9 months from now, I mean, is the mindset of worst case scenario, I want to be in a number one contender fight?
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal. You know, I tell people I didn't come as far to come as far. And, you know, I got into the UFC seeking out the best competition. You know what I mean? I've been an underdog in my last two fights. Not very often does the UFC put you as an underdog two fights in a row. You know, I've been seeking out hard competition, and I'm going to continue to look for that, those opportunities to fight, you know, really tough guys, because I want to be number one. I want to be the man. And in order to be the man, you got to beat the man. You know, in this sport, you know, nothing's given to you. So, you know, I'm definitely going to be fighting, you know, the absolute elite of MMA at bantamweight this year.
I can see the little bit of damage you did take there on the left eye. Is it just something that, you know, just a couple, you know, a couple days, couple weeks, you're going to be good to go?
Yeah, I got a couple. Yeah, they didn't even give me a suspension. It was it's not a real deep cut. It was just kind of more of a cosmetic thing. They wanted to, you know, keep it shut so that I didn't have any scarring or anything like that. They stitched me up right there in the right after the fight. So, yeah, this isn't going to deter anything. You know, I'm still healthy. I'm still feeling good. So, yeah, I mean, I could get back in there as early as June probably.
I mean, I was going to ask you about the timeline of ideally when you want your next fight. I mean, you know, June, July is kind of the target.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's, you know, in middle of summer, I think that would be ideal. You know, it'd give me time to kind of reflect on this one. You know, take a little time for my body to heal. You know, take a little time to get better, you know, kind of, you know, work with my coaches and just do kind of, you know, specific things that maybe I did right, wrong. Kind of go over this last fight, improve, and then, you know, get back in there. You know, like I told you before, I'm not a guy that, I don't like sitting on the bench for a long time. You know, I really do enjoy fighting. I don't have like that competition anxiety that I feel like a lot of guys have, where they're like almost, you know, they're almost like the thought of competing like terrifies them. Even guys that you know, at a high level, like, I love doing it. Not only that, you know, I'm getting paid pretty well to do it. So I'm looking to get in there soon.
I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but I have to imagine that since you just took on a guy that had number 7 next to his name, you want it to be, you know, 6 or higher up in the rankings, correct?
Yeah. And I'm not. I think the UFC has me ranked at 12th right now. And Caraway still ranked in front of me. Aljamain Sterling was ranked in front of me. I feel like that's kind of BS because, you know, Brian beat Aljamain Sterling pretty decisively, and then I just beat Brian. I feel like I should be ranked above both those guys. But, the politics and the BS and the rankings, who knows, you know, how they come up with the numbers that they do. But I'm looking at, like, you know, there's a few people that have me ranked at 8th, and I think that's a pretty accurate ranking, and they have those guys ranked behind me. So I'm going to go ahead and just say that I'm 8th. I'm ranked number 8th right now, and I want to fight, you know, I want to fight like number 5. I want to fight John Lineker. I think that's a fight that you know, stylistically is a really, really good fight for me. I feel like I could take him down. I could beat him up in a boxing exchange. You know, things he does well, I do better. So, you know, Lineker's definitely the guy that's on my radar. And if that, if they had asked me who I wanted to fight, what's the ideal fight for me next, I would say John Lineker.
The one thing I've always said about rankings, you know, I don't, you know, being a part of the MMA media, I don't really care what our rankings are. I'd love to know what the rankings of Sean Shelby and McMaynard are. That would be the interesting rankings to know.
Yeah, that would really be the real question. Like, you know, what are the guys that run the show think? Where do they think you stack up in the division? That would be that's really the only ranking that actually matters. You know, everything else is like, you know, it's all fake. it's not consistent. I mean, I can, you know, one person can have you ranked number one, and another person can have you ranked, you know, 50th. I mean, the only consistent ranking is the guy that's the champ. And the only ranking that matters is exactly what you said, you know, Sean Shelby and McMaynard's ranking for you.
I think fighters would probably pay to see that number.
Yeah. Honestly, I know I would. But also it'd be kind of hard to know. It'd be kind of hard to know what, you know, what does the boss think of you? What does the boss think that you are on this roster? It'd be interesting to know that, though.
It could be good or bad. Because you could.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you could either be like, yeah, you know, this guy thinks I'm a legit contender. He thinks I'm going to do it. Or he thinks I'm the number five guy, and there's, you know, there's four guys that can beat me. So I think either way, I don't know. It'd be, you know, it's one of those things. Like, do you really want to know? Do you really want to know where you think you stack up? And I mean, those guys know fighting. If there's, you know, anyone that really knows the sport and knows competitors, I mean, you got to think, you know, Sean Shelby, McMaynard had those jobs for a really good reason. I think they probably know who's going to win 99% of fights. I mean, I'm sure there's always the outlier, but I think those guys would be the guys you'd want to know who to bet on too. But they'd be the people to ask.
Of course, you were the second fight of the night. Did you stick around for the fights, and did anything stick out to you?
No, I took off as soon as I could. As soon as I got my stitches, did all my media stuff, I got out of there. Because they stick you in the back room, you're stuck in the locker room. I had a lot of friends there, a lot of people I felt like I needed to, you know, hang out with while I was there, because obviously I hadn't seen him before the fight. I was pretty focused and in preparation. So I went back to my hotel as soon as I could. I didn't even watch. I didn't even watch any of the fights. I watched a few highlights, but I didn't even watch the fights.
But of course, it's another win for you, 17-1 in your career. We look forward to seeing when the next fight may take place, Cody. As always, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Everything's just Cody Stamen. Appreciate taking the time. Hopefully, we'll be doing this again in about a month and a half, right?
Exactly, Cody. As always, man, appreciate this. Daniel, there was my conversation with Cody Stamen. As I said in the interview, I'm not saying that Cody Stamen, why I feel he won the fight just because I have him here on the podcast. If I didn't think he won the fight, I would tell him I didn't think he won the fight. But I thought he won the fight. You hear him say John Lineker is who he wants to fight next. Are you down for Lineker Stamen?
I'm going to be honest. I'm not like I'm down. I'm down for any John Lineker fight. But the problem for Stamen is like, I think everyone wants to call out John Lineker, and I want to see John Lineker fight everyone. Stamen would be an interesting one, but honestly, I would much rather see Lineker in a fight where it's like surefire. This is going to be a barn burner, Mortal Kombat style stand-up contest, but it's good that Stamen's calling people out. He looked good here. This was a guy, Stamen, where he had a fight out of his comfort zone against Brian Caraway. Brian Caraway came into this fight, and I could not believe it afterwards, because I obviously knew the entire contest was Brian Caraway trying to wrestle Stamen down. But he attempted 20 takedowns, wasn't successful on 19 of them. Holy moly, that is insane. Stamen did a nice job defending the wrestling, and I thought he clearly won rounds 2 and 3, as clear as butter. It wasn't the most egregious scorecard. I want to beat it down into the ground that I thought the scorecard for Zingano was a travesty. I was so angry. I was so angry when we had Zingano get her hand raised, Vieira get her hand raised, and I was like, what the hell is going on? And the worst part is about that scorecard or that announcement is Bruce Buffer was in a bad situation because Catlin sounds a lot like Cat. And when he would announce the last one, I thought Zingano won the fight for half a second. He was like, Catlin! And for some reason, I thought it was Cat. I think the crowd did too. if you can hear the crowd. But anyways, you are not a PR guy for Cody Stamann, Jason, because to me, obviously he won rounds 2 and 3 and won 29-28 against Caraway.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge win for him. You know, let's talk about huge wins. Alexander Hernandez, man, no one saw that one coming. I will tell you, I'm actually going to have an interview with Alexander Hernandez coming up this week. Also going to be talking to Zach Otto, who got the win over Mike Pyle. We mentioned about John Dotson. CB Dalloway gets a DQ win. I had no problems with them calling that a DQ.
Oh, dude, hell yeah. Lombard cheated. Round was over. And then he scored his knockout after the round is over. That was awesome. I like it when rules are in. I mean, that wasn't awesome that he knocked out a guy after the fight. Like, that really was awful. But clear cut decision that had to have been made kind of made me angry that Lombard's camp was angry at it, because it's like, you know, that specifically that second punch was so clearly afterwards that it almost felt inevitable that something like this is going to happen to Lombard, man. He always finds himself in these weird situations.
Yeah, it was it'd be interesting to see if the UFC does keep him around. My guess is they probably don't. You know, Mackenzie Dern, we really haven't mentioned her. She gets a win here. You know, as I was watching the fight, Daniel, interesting to see her, you know, essentially for the most part utilize her striking, but the one thing you still walk away from it is this is still a developing fighter.
I thought her stand-up was improved, but that was still a major advantage for Ashley Yoder. I mean, that second round from Ashley Yoder was a great one. She was taking Dern to town, and I thought the tide was turning. And fortunately, in that third round, Mackenzie was able to bring it down and ensure that she won the fight. But it's pretty kind of clear where we're at with Mackenzie Dern's career. Is she is very far away from her prime, and she still needs a whole lot of seasoning to work on both her stand-up and her ability to take fights down to the ground. Excuse me. I'm sorry, I just burped, and the reason why is I had like 14 buffalo wings for lunch. So staying true to form. But yeah, I think that's the clear story for Dern. I mean, do you think the UFC is going to rush her to a fight she probably shouldn't get at strawweight?
I don't think so. I don't see them rushing her. I think they probably know they could have something with her. So I think, slow build with her. I think there's nothing wrong with you know, working her way up and let her, because, you know, potentially she could be a little bit of a draw for them. John Dotson, you mentioned a little about Pedro Munhoz. He gets the win. He's now a free agent. He's pretty much made it clear he wants to come back to the UFC. It would be interesting if he does wait out to see if Bellator would make him an offer. I still think if Dotson can put together another win or two, you do have a little backstory for him and a rematch between him and TJ at some point.
Yeah, man, he's a really skilled fighter. He's had issues piecing together consecutive wins. I mean, he hasn't done that since 2015, but he made it clear in this contest against Pedro Munhoz in a fight that was played out primarily on the feet that he is very much still a top 10 bantamweight, even higher than that. I think there's value for Bellator in signing talented fighters. John Dotson isn't by any means a name, but he is very much a talented fighter. And if you're trying to bolster that bantamweight division, a top three of Darian Caldwell, Michael McDonald, and John Dotson is real interesting. A fight between John Dotson and Darian Caldwell, I would love, and it would give Caldwell an opportunity to get higher among the – I mean, you talk about opportunity for Darian Caldwell to be amongst the best of bantamweight. A 1-2 option of Michael McDonald Dotson would be just that. So I think Bellator should really look into how much they have to fork over to John Dotson. And I think John Dotson isn't going to light the world on fire in free agency. But I do think there's a lot of value, and I really do hope the UFC looks into bringing him back, just because it's a shame when really talented fighters aren't able to get solid paydays.
Yeah. One other thing to mention about this fight card, the prelims drew 905,000 viewers.
Well, you know how a fight was bad or not exciting is if it happened on the main card and we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's bad when I ask people Sunday if someone said there was one bad fight. So what was it? And they mentioned that fight.
Yeah, can we just say two things? Or I'll say two things about Andrei Arlovsky, Stefan Struve. One is, can we just agree that at 30 years old, we don't need to mention that Stefan Struve needs to employ the jab? Like, we get it, Daniel Cormier, but we're like 20 fights into career Stefan Struve. He's just not going to do it. So we don't need to talk about it every single fight, man. And then this was just look, win over Struve's impressive on paper. This fight was pretty bad, and this was very much a B-side contest where the winner gets to be the B-side of a big heavyweight fight. That's all it was. And I will say, I don't know where you put him when it comes to best heavyweights of all time. Andrei Arlovsky's on the list somewhere. He's certainly on the top 15 somewhere because of the longevity this man has had. But this fight was a doozy.
Yeah.
Anyways, you're talking about the ratings.
Yeah. I mean, but one thing on Arlovsky, I mean, think about it. We've pretty much written this guy off twice in his career. You know, both with, you know, the losing streaks he's had, but now he's won back to back. We'll see what happens there. But in terms of the ratings for the prelims, 905,000 viewers, which was identical to the UFC 220 preliminary viewership back in January. And of course, it went up against the Duke North Carolina game, which drew over 3 million viewers. So a good number there for the UFC. And of course, the next UFC event is going to be next Saturday over in London, headlined by Verdum and Volkov. And odd decision to run that event on opening week of the men's NCAA college basketball tournament. Odd decision, Daniel.
You don't. Yeah, it is an odd decision, and it's going to show you who are hardcore MMA fans. I mean, UFC is appealing to a cross section of sports fans, and I just think if you're a sports fan and you think about what March Madness is in this country, especially that first day. If you're a sports fan, you are not making the decision to watch this card over March Madness. And I mean, the UFC is probably going to take an L on it, but the good thing for them is that this is a card that's on Fight Pass. So it's not like viewership. It's not like live viewership is like the highest priority in the world just because the money's already in the bank and it's, you know, they're not going to release this information anyway, however many viewers they get. So I guess that's the win here. But, man, it's almost like this is a live event that happens to be broadcasted on Fight Pass. It's like they're going to sell tickets in the O2 Arena, hopefully, they hope. And if you're a hardcore MMA fan, I guess you can watch it because not only is this going head-to-head against March Madness, but this is a pretty – interesting card at the very top, but none of these fights are super sexy. Verdum Volkov is a very interesting heavyweight contest. But I think there's going to be very little talk on Twitter while this is going on.
It'll be a go back after the fact and watch the fight card for me because I'll have something going on that day. Plus, honestly, if I didn't have anything going on that day, Daniel, if FSU was playing, I'd definitely be watching the college basketball no matter what. But we'll see how that one does go. Of course, on Friday night, it was Bellator 195 from the Windstar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. Darren Caldwell retains the bantamweight title, a submission win in the opening round against Leandro Higo. Also, Joe Timinglo, split decision win over Joe Warren. Christina Williams, split decision win over Emily Dakota. And Juan Archuleta with a decision win over William Joplin. But Darren Caldwell, you know, to me, is a guy that, you know, I know that there is going to be a majority of people that probably will not put him in the conversation as one of the best bantamweight fighters in the world because he doesn't fight in the UFC. But he should be in the conversation as one of the best bantamweight fighters in the world.
Well, yeah, kinda. I think you're right. It's just like it's hard to compare him. It's hard to look at his resume and his victories and say he's in the conversation with TJ Dillashaw. It's just hard for me to make that statement. But I do think he has the potential to be there because of his dominance and because of how good he is. I just think what he needs is – I think he has potential to be there, especially what's on his plate moving forward. I think a fight against Michael McDonald is just – if he comes out there and dominates Michael McDonald or just wins, he's a part of that conversation. But what can you say? Darren Caldwell is undoubtedly one of the brightest stars Bellator has. He obviously is – but he is something that Bellator needs to hold on to because he is so much fun to watch. He is incredibly skilled. He may, in fact, be the most skilled fighter in Bellator today. There's a list, and he's certainly at the very top, along with guys like Roy McDonald. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Chandler and Primus. I think Chandler is super damn good too. But Darren Caldwell is one of the best fighters in Bellator. He just came out, took care of business. He looked so strong with the way he sunk in that guillotine choke. He just bullied Higo to tap out. And I will say this. He may not be a star. He may not be a name. But I loved that post-fight interview out of Caldwell. You know, he doesn't care about how he is perceived when it comes to having manners. This guy's going to throw an S-bomb. You know, he's going to say the four-letter S-word. And he was ready to fight all three Pitbull brothers. And I love it, man. There was so much energy and passion with his post-fight interview that my big takeaway out of Bellator 195 is Bellator has a star on their hands. It's just up to them to figure out how to turn that star into eyeballs watching their product.
You know, and I saw some people saying, you know, it's up to Bellator to raise the profile of Darren Caldwell. And I think a lot of that is true. But I also think that, you know, Darren Caldwell, the people around him have to do things to help elevate his stock, you know. And you know, we saw the television ratings come out for this and the third straight show that Bellator has had under 500,000 viewers, which is obviously a disappointing number if you're Bellator. And, you know, we got a question from Dwayne Barth about this where he said, he goes, I believe Bellator's MMA ratings crash is a serious concern to the combat sports community. It's obvious, multifactorial, involving poor management, lack of roster depth, and young talent development, bizarre decision-making, Bellator 200 in UK on tape delay. Now Krokop, who took zero responsibility from USADA penalty, competed overseas, and now is being featured in the Bellator cage. To me, all roads must lead to Scott Coker. Also mentions about the circus acts, you know, saying that he prays that Chuck Liddell does not gets denied a license, and asking if we were Viacom executives, you are demolishing Buffalo Wings in the boardroom and thinking what? You know, and one of the ways we kind of wanted to attack this was, you know, it's just not a Bellator problem. I think let's correct that. This is an MMA problem. You know, we've seen in the UFC, we're seeing in Bellator, not as many people are watching it. Now, I think part of that, and you could look at television across the board, is cord cutters. You know, they're talking, you know, 10% less people are actually watching cable television, you know, whether it's, you know, cable or satellite. So that's part of the problem. But to me, in terms of how does Bellator improve the ratings, I think, I mean, I hate to say it's as simple as this, but I think they just have to get fans excited about their product.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's keep in mind, I could be wrong here, but the ratings is not impacted by cord cutting, right? Because it's only viewership, right? It isn't ratings like percentage divided by.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of total viewers that are watching the product.
Oh, yeah. Viewers, that's people are cutting the cord.
I mean, the thing is, I remember when I was looking at YouTube TV probably 2 or 3 months ago, and I was like, okay, if I ever did want to cut the cord, you know, because YouTube TV, I mean, they've got a lot of channels. There's DVR function on it, but Spike/Paramount is not on there. And, you know, and I put, you know, a question out on my social media account about it, you know, and one person mentioned about maybe they should be doing like countdown type shows. I don't know if that would really have much of an effect that would bring up there. But one of the tweets I wanted to mention that I got was from Tim Hughes. He does the Glory announcing. And he said this. He says, the gimmick bouts wear thin quickly when none rise to the hype given them. Chuck and Tito, really? I am happy for the Iceman to get a payday, but sad it has come to that. What further degrade a legacy? I will say this. The Liddell thing, I'm not for it. Do people forget how Chuck ended? Do people forget that Dana White said, no, you're retiring? Like, The thing with me about Chuck, and clearly they're probably throwing so much money at Chuck that he can't turn it down, is where's the people around Chuck Liddell say, no, Chuck, you shouldn't be fighting?
I think they need money. Well, here's the other thing. Need money. That has to be the only answer, because he looked like complete. It was when he fought Rich Franklin. I don't know what was that, 1994? Whenever that happened
that would have
so
been
long.
What, 2010?
Dude, he looked so old in that fight, and it's 8 years later.
Think about this. Here's where a problem I think when you're trying to get a fighter license. If you got a commission shop them, you got an issue.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest about it. There are states that I think I could say confidently, without talking to those commissions, that would not license Chuck Liddell. I don't think California would. I don't think Nevada would. I don't think New York would. I don't think Mohegan Tribe under Mike Mazzulli, who regulates the shows at Mohegan Sun and also regulates all of the Bellators overseas. But, Daniel, I think we both live in states that would give Chuck Liddell a license.
Yeah, I think Texas certainly would.
I think Florida would. I think Missouri would. I think Tennessee would. Smaller states, I think, would give him a license. But I don't want to see Chuck Liddell, because I feel like it's just going to be a very sad, like, and because I remember when he fought Chuck Liddell, my brother got married that Saturday. We were in a sports bar that Saturday night down in Naples, Florida. We found one bar that was showing the pay-per-view. And I remember when he got knocked out, I was like, man, this is sad.
Yeah.
Chuck was never the same after he got knocked out by Rampage. He only won one fight
That was demise. If you have trouble getting a fighter license that's a former UFC champion, you have issues.
He's 48 years old, too. Look, I get that Chuck Liddell can bring a lot of viewership to the product. I get that. But at some point, I know some people, I've seen people mention this on social media with Bellator, what are they doing? To sign a guy like Juan Archuleta, which, I mean, first off, you kind of wonder when a guy's, 16, 17, one on the regional scene, how is he, why is it taking him this long to get, to that offer? Maybe that was a team decision that they just wanted him to be developed. But, sometimes I do wonder, what is the long-term plan of Bellator? I think what does hurt Bellator is Scott Coker does not do a lot of interviews, and I think he should be doing. I'm not saying that, I want Scott Coker on this podcast. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying overall, Scott Coker needs to be out more in front promoting the Bellator product than what he currently is.
Yeah, man. Juan Archuleta, William Joplin was a bad fight to put on TV. Archuleta beat the heck out of that guy, 130-23. But I know Joplin was a late replacement, but you got to have a long list of fighters that are better than him to sub in for late replacement, because that fight was really bad to put on TV. And by the way, the commentators, oh man, bad job by Chael on this one. He did great otherwise in this event, but there was a lot of BS. And then on this fight about how it was better than it was or more competitive at points, and the very end, they did one little exchange between the two. And Goldberg was like, what a fight. And I'm like, oh, this was a 30-23 contest, buddy. But yeah, I mean, that fight was pretty lame. I mean, Joe Warren, Timinglo is one of the better bantamweights, but this was a fight where Joe Warren just felt kind of old. And then Emily Ducote, Christina Williams is a fight between two people who don't have Wikipedia profiles. But I will say this. Christina Williams looks pretty good two fights into her professional career.
Yeah, I mean, think the question now becomes is her third fight for the title?
It could be, because you look at what has earned people title shots. It's similar resumes. I mean, she has beat two of the fighters that Coker has identified as potential draws in Ducote and Heather Hardy. She could certainly get it, and she might just win it, although Ali Malay is quite good and she may present problems there. But I will say Christina Williams, it really impressed me in that fight. And just to answer the question we got from Dwayne, great question, love the wording. If I just want to dust off the wings off my fingertips, And maybe lick them off because the flavor is good. I like how you framed it right away, Jason, where this is advice not only for Bellator but for the UFC, because I think it fits both of them. And the way the advice is pretty standard. You have too many events. Just to make an example, if I can only make buffalo wings for four, if I can only make enough buffalo wings to serve customers for 4 hours out of the day, I'm not going to open my store for 12 hours because I'm going to have to start serving them. Like, I'm going to have to be like, I don't have buffalo wings, but would you be interested? I have these two saltine crackers and I know you heard about it. It came out 25 years ago, but I have this ice cream pop that you might like, this WWF ice cream sandwich. It came out 25 years ago and I know it's supposed to be retired, but I'm sure you'll like it. So it's as simple as take a look at your roster. You don't have enough fighters to run as many events as they are. You got to answer the question. This is the simple question. Can I put on four fights that will get an MMA fan excited? If you can't, then do less events because you've got skilled fighters. And also, number two, for the love of God, be a good promoter. Stop trying to get quick fast. Stop trying the fast food option of just putting it back in the microwave. You have skilled fighters, and you are doing a good job of promoting Aaron Pico and stuff like that. But build around these guys. Identify who these fighters are and build these cards around them. Instead of spending money, all the money you spend on someone like Mirko Krokop is an opportunity cost. That money could be spent on several prospects that could develop into the next Mirko Krokop. I think there's a big opportunity cost when they shell out money for these short-term fights that aren't building to anything. They need to understand that what could draw is stars, and sometimes – and you are in the business of making stars. The goal should not be how can I book Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz or Dave Monet versus Frank Shamrock in 2018. The goal should be how do I make Darian Caldwell a star? What is the strategy I need to implement? Who are the fighters and fight cards I can surround him with? So, in short, my three-point plan is don't run as many events. Stop doing tape delay events. Put on better events.
I mean, look, I wonder how much tape delay events has hurt their overall product here in the United States. I don't know if anyone could – I don't think there's a way to – have a scientific answer on that. I mean, you know, you look at, and Dwayne mentioned in the question, I mean, look at Bellator 200. Like, and I know I was watching the MAR on Monday, and Ariel was talking about this, and I'm glad to see someone of Ariel's stature really taking Bellator to task on this. Like, you talk about a landmark event for Bellator, and your primary business is in the United States, and you're stacking the deck the way you are. I understand that you're trying to develop that UK market, but to have that type of event with that amount of named fighters and telling your US fans, sorry, you've got to wait 6 hours to see this event. Like, and the thing I've always heard is this is not a decision made by the fight people in Bellator. They want these fights live. It's Viacom who's making these decisions. And it's another prime example of how Viacom does not view Bellator as a sports property. They view it as a reality show that happens to be on the Paramount Network. And it's just like, how can you expect, and that's a holiday weekend, you know, it's Memorial Day weekend. How can you expect someone to sit at home on a Friday night to watch a tape delay show?
Yeah, and it's such a shame because it is shaping up to be quite an interesting fight card. So we've been beating that dead horse into the ground forever and ever. And I think the tape delay events have hurt the reputation of a Bellator card because, as we have mentioned on podcasts before, it's as simple as telling the viewers that every Bellator card is not appointment viewing. You can miss some. And once they start missing some, then they start missing all of them.
Like, I'm not sure how to feel about Krokop fighting in Bellator.
I am.
I'm torn a little bit. And the reason for that is, I mean, look, he did get a 2-year suspension from USADA. He did fight overseas during that suspension. I mean, yes, it's been, 2.5 years or a little over 2 years, you know, since that handed down. So I guess technically you could say he served it, but then, you know, I look at Bellator, and I mean, look, there is more drug testing going on than people think there is. There is drug testing going on, and I'm sure Mirko is going to probably get drug tested multiple times leading up to this fight by Mike Mazzulli. But I'm conflicted on how to feel about this.
Well, I know he's won 8 fights in a row, and I know he has a win over King Mo and a win over Gabriel Gonzaga. But, geez, Mirko Krokop's 43, and he thought about retiring 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 10 years ago.
I mean, like,
he thought about retiring.
Let's say they're paying Mirko $100K to show up. You could have probably gone out and got 4 or 5 prospects for that same price.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's one of my major points is it's an opportunity cost. All the money you spend, you know, look at the money being spent on this main card. Oof. And then look at the card we just had on Friday. I mean, why wasn't Michael Page versus Paul Daly on Bellator 195? I mean, I know why. Like, you're not going to run that in Thackerville, Oklahoma, and those two are never going to fight ever. But, you know, now we're getting Page and Rickles and Fitch and Daly. And to me, it's almost like it's a shame that Page and Daly didn't get into the cage together. Ugh. That's a mess up.
But like, speaking of Paul Daly, I don't understand the matchup with John Fitch.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, is this punishment to Paul for the things he said? But then I'm sitting there going, I mean, let's break down this fight. It's going one or two ways. Either Paul's going to knock him out in the first 5 minutes, or John's going to wrestle him for 15 minutes.
Yep. It's a questionable fight.
Is that what's best for? I mean, I guess if Paul wins, you know, it delivers the type of fight you like to have on television. But if it's you know, John out wrestling him for 15 minutes, is that the type of fight you want to give your fans?
No. I mean, it's going to be just as boring as the interview they did on TV today or on Friday. Like the interview they did, an interview with John Fitch, and it was like over Skype, and it was. I mean, it was not good TV. It was just boring vanilla answer after vanilla answer, and the questions weren't great either. So, yeah, I'm not super excited for John Fitch and Paul Daly. I would have been super excited for Paul Daly versus Michael Page. And I tell you what, maybe you could have done David Rickles and John Fitch. That may have been a better matchup. I don't know. Maybe they can switch the two fights.
But, I mean, look, Michael Page is getting a step up in competition. There's that. At least there's that.
Yeah, and he's a hypothetical star they got on their hands.
Yeah, I mean, but a guy we haven't seen in the Bellator cage in, what, a year?
Yeah, and for a fighter that is supposed to be someone you're building around, that's just an absolute shame.
Yeah. Also should mention LFA took place last weekend. Robert Whatley retains the lightweight title. He's now a free agent. It'd be interesting to see if Bellator makes a run at him. I think most likely, I might guess, this is just pure guess on my part. I think he ends up in the UFC. Anything else catch your eye this weekend?
Oh, yeah, man. I didn't watch the fight or whatever. I just saw the GIFs online and read about it. But you had KSW 42 going on in Poland. And, you know, KSW is the promotion that is really putting together events with great production, big event feel. And there was major news coming out of the top two fights, and maybe not great for the Polish market. I guess it didn't really matter in the main event because you had Poland versus Poland, but in the co-main event, a guy at middleweight that they're really building in Michael Matarla just got straight up run through by Scott Askham due to body kicks, like in a minute into the fight. Askham got the win there. And then in the main event, you had the middleweight champion, Mamed Khalidov, who had not lost since 2010. I think he's won 20 consecutive fights in a row. He's 37 years old, and he's one of those fighters, along with Ben Askren, that will always be a big what if in terms of what would have happened had he signed with the UFC. Well, he went up in weight, and he fought at 203 pounds against their light heavyweight champion in a super fight against Thomas Narkuna. And basically what happened, according to what I read, is Khalidov won the first two rounds, you know, dropping Narkuna on the feet, but then he got caught in a triangle choke in the third round. So he snapped his 20-fight losing streak. And then also, by the way, a fighter to mention is – ooh, I want to get her nickname right. Ariana Lipsky. She's a 24-year-old Brazilian. Her nickname is the Violence Queen, and she is the KSW flyweight champion. She defended her title. And she is now 11-3. And at 24 years old, I think Ariana Lipsky is a fighter UFC needs to hone in on to bring into their flyweight division.
We are going to let you hear my conversation with Lindsey Jones here momentarily. But I do want to get to this question that was asked to us by Lex Jansen. And in relation to Mr. Conor McGregor saying, if Conor was so eager to fight, why didn't he accept the Ferguson fight? Of course, Dana White, after UFC 222, did confirm that Conor was willing to step up on short notice to take on Frankie Edgar. Obviously, it is a route they did not go. My general thought on it, I think Conor saw an opportunity where he maybe thought the UFC was going to give him what he wanted.
Yeah, and then I guess, I mean, it's hard, you know, Conor's thought process is incredibly hard to track down logically, but maybe he also thought he had a much better chance of winning that fight than he did against Tony Ferguson. That would be my other answer.
Yeah,
you but know, maybe he's scared of Tony.
Yeah, we'll see whenever Conor does step back into the cage. But right now, I'm going to let you hear my conversation with Lindsey Jones, who's going to be the main event of Valor 48 at the end of this March on March the 31st. Going to take on Robert Hale in a number one contenders matchup. So here's my conversation with Lindsey Jones. Lindsey, as always, man, I appreciate time. It has been some time since we've seen you inside competition July of last year. I know you've been in the gym there at ATT, but has it been frustrating not to be able to get into the cage?
Yeah, it's been pretty frustrating. You know, I was actually scheduled to fight back in August, 2 weeks after I fought in July. But, you know, we had a hurricane came through South Florida, then it got pushed back, and then it got pushed back again for a third time, and then the whole event got canceled. So it's been pretty frustrating, but hey, getting ready to fight again in less than a month, man. So I'm excited.
I'm very aware of that event, as I was supposed to call play-by-play for that, so very aware of the event that you are talking about. But, you know, they always talk about how you're a different fighter every time. So how would you say you're different now as opposed to the end of July?
So a lot different. You know, the time between my first pro fight and then my last pro fight, man, I think that was like 9 months or something like that. The same amount of time has elapsed between my last fight and now. And, you know, I'm at a great camp, and we have great coaches and great training partners. Man, just I'm improving every day. And they're going to see a more polished Lindsey Jones when it comes out there. Smoother, straight to the point when it comes to the finishes. And, you know, get in and get out of there without taking any damage.
And, of course, you've been known for that in your three pro fights, not wasting any time. And while you do train down there in Coconut Creek, this is a Georgia versus Georgia battle against Robert Hale. For those who are not aware, this is a number one contenders fight. The winner's fight will take on Jason King for the welterweight title. So how familiar were you with Robert, you know, before getting this matchup?
Very familiar with him. We were actually supposed to fight back in October. You know, which was right after all that delay with the other fight I was going to be on. But I had injuries and I had things going on that I said, hey, you know, if I'm going to fight this guy, I want to be at 100%. So I'm aware of him, you know, and he's from Georgia, and Georgia is not the MMA scene. It's not huge, you know, so you almost know everybody. So I've had my eye on him for about 2 years now because I knew at some point in time we were going to cross paths. So I know what he seems to do well and what he doesn't seem to do well.
And he's been extremely active since turning pro. This can be
a six
fight in 9 months. Yeah. You know, he's coming off a win at 8-6-4. You know, he after you know losing a couple of fights, he's now won back to back fights. I mean, what do you see in him as he has evolved from you know his first pro fight to now?
You know, he seems athletic. He seems to hit hard, but he also seems to have a lot of holes. All over his game, especially in the wrestling department and the grappling department. Even with his striking, you know, it seems he relies on a lot of athleticism, you know, and there's openings there where you can be hit, you can be taken down, or, you know, you can enter into the clinch.
How can you judge how much power a guy has by watching film?
You know, it's hard to judge, but I tend to judge the other guy and see how he reacts to getting punched, you know? And I've seen he's dropped some guys. He seems like he's dropped more guys in his amateur career than as a professional. You know, I don't really look at guys' amateur careers anymore. To me, it's irrelevant because those guys were not training like professionals. And, they're weeded out. They don't make it to the pros like these other guys have, you know? And that's it, man.
And, of course, I mentioned, you know, it's, number one contender fight is what they're calling it. Have you even thought about Jason King at all?
Not one bit. Robert Hale poses many threats, you know. He's dangerous. So all my focus is on him and, you know, getting out of this fight and then the potential Jason King fight later in the year.
Do you feel that you have more pressure in this matchup than Robert has just because of the fast rise that you've had so far in the sport?
Yeah, you know, I would say I have a little more pressure because I have the undefeated record. You know, there's a lot of hype behind me, apparently. So I feel a little bit, but man, I'm not the type of guy who really succumbs to the pressure or really lets it bother me. I'm just, hey, man, I got a fight in 4 weeks, win, lose, or draw. I'm going to be back in the gym, you know, the following week. So
is just pressure one of those things that you just love?
No, I hate it. I hate it with a passion. It's horrible, you know, because I'm the type of guy who kind of, you know, gets riled up or is his own worst enemy. So there will be times where I'm trying to chill at night, just enjoy, you know, watch some Netflix or whatever it is. And I'm like, oh, man, what's Robert doing? And then before you know it, I put my running shoes on and I'm off going running these miles just because I thought, you know, he was going to be training at this hour. He was going to be doing that. So I try to get away from the pressure as much as possible.
Now, will you kind of lurk on his social media and see if he offers you any clues of what he's been doing?
Oh, dude, that is the worst. I can never do that. You know, that seems to just get me riled up and get my anxiety going. So I don't even check social media. I stay off of it, you know, because it's irrelevant, dude. People can seem like gangsters on social media, but you see them in real life training, you're like, whatever, you know, it's social media, man.
Now, have you ever had one of your opponent's family members just like constantly hitting you up on social media?
No, I haven't had that happen yet. But I've, you know, after a couple fights, I've had their family members be pretty rude to me. You know, they weren't very happy with how the outcome went, but that's been it, man.
You should ask your manager, David, about that. He was telling me a little story about one of his clients and getting bombarded by a family member. Just talking trash.
Hey, dude, it doesn't surprise me. These people are crazy out here, especially when you get on Facebook. Like, you click on these threads, and man, it's just all this shit talking. All of it. Everyone's jumping in.
Hey, but for you as a fighter, it is kind of part of the game, though, right?
Yeah, man, it's part of the game, but it's not part of me, you know? I know people, they want to hear that Conor McGregor trash talking and everything, but just being honest with how I am, I just want to go out there and do the damn thing, you know? I don't want to talk crap. I don't want to call you names, but I know it sells tickets, apparently. But kind of hard for me to do. You know, I just want to go out there and do it.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, this weekend you got Brian Ortega fighting. And Ortega's one of these guys that he's just a martial artist. And he lets his fighting do the talking for him.
Yeah.
And I think it's with fighters, it seems it's one way or the other. Either, hey, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to trash talk, I'm trying to try to get people interested. Or, hey, you know what, look at my fight footage. I'm going to put on a show, and that's why you should watch me fight.
Yeah, I think you should put me, hopefully, in the Brian Ortega category, you know? So I want to be in that. I don't want to talk the crap. And if they talk crap back to me, you know, I'm going to say something back. I'm not just going to, you know, get called names. But another part of it is don't let it affect you. It's just words, as crazy as that might sound.
You know, with all your fights ending in the first round here, is it one of those things? Do you ever find yourself trying to top, you know, those victories with your next fight?
Oh, I always think of that, you know? Always. I always want to see how can I finish it a little earlier? Can I get the finish a little more impressive? But you know, at the end of the day, I'm just trying to get the W. You know, the big thing is for me is get that win. And then the second thing is don't go to a decision.
Some guys might say, hey, I want to have that 3-round war. Why would I want that?
No. You know, I'm really concerned with brain health. Super concerned with it. You know, even sparring hard bothers me, you know, but I know it's part of it, you know, so I want to decrease my chances of getting hit in the head as much as possible.
How many days a week will you spar?
So this week I sparred Tuesday and Thursday. And of course, leading up to this fight, I have to spar, you know, I have to get ready. And with especially someone like Robert, who I know is going to bring it, I have to go with those guys in the room who are going to bring it as well. So it doesn't make for an easy week. You know, today was a tough day. You know, Tuesday was a better day. But you have to go out there, and I think at times you have to feel what it's going to be like getting hit, you know, getting busted up. You get ready for the fight. But outside of a training camp, man, it's light spar, shadow spar. Don't get hit in the head. Wear your headgear. Be safe.
For you, training down there in Coconut Creek is kind of the thought of, like, the hard days are in the gym with, you know, all these guys I'm with, and really fight night is the easy night.
It really is. You know, a lot of people, they probably don't see it that way from the outside, but you go into this room, you go into the sparring room, and there's, you know, there might be 20 guys, 25 guys in there, and half of those guys are in the UFC or in another top promotion, whether it's ONE FC, whether it's Bellator, or whether it's the ACB in Russia. You know, so, man, there's all these high-level guys in here. And just because you have 16-ounce gloves on and shin guards and elbow pads and knee pads doesn't mean they're going to throw with any less intensity, you know? It's just a little more weight in their hands.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see this fight come here March 31st live on Flow Combat. Of course, Victor Hero put you there in line for a title shot against Jason King, which I'm guessing is probably going to be in Knoxville. I'm guessing going, you know.
I'm guessing.
Just because I know how much of a ticket seller Jason is in Knoxville. Yeah. Is that something you like? You like going into your opponent's backyard potentially?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to go in there and kind of be like the invader, I guess. Go out there, hear the boos when I walk out. You know, it'd be fun, though. You know, I would enjoy the whole process. And if he's a big ticket seller, you know the venue is going to be packed, you know. So better reason to kind of, you know, rein in the show.
Lindsay, as always, man, I appreciate time. Where can everyone follow you at on social media?
You can follow me on Instagram, LindsayJones170. The same for my Twitter, LindsayJones170. And then Facebook, just Lindsay Jones.
Daniel, there was my conversation with the man they call Sweet Tea down at American Top Team. Lindsay Jones, definitely a guy that fans should be paying attention to. Would not be surprised, you know, if he's in the UFC within the next year. But we do want to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast, talk about some of the other MMA news and notes. Are you all in on Luke Rockhold versus Michael Bisping 3 at 205 pounds like Luke is calling for?
Sure. Let's do it. Let's give Michael Bisping one more fight. That's an interesting fight, and I think it's the best of both worlds because we get excited about it, and it presents an opportunity to give Rockhold a nice victory. But I hope Bisping
I'm for it. Fight.
Me too. I'm for it.
I mean, I think, you know, they could probably sell that fight a little bit there. Do want to mention a great tribute by Bellator on Friday night and also by the UFC on Saturday. As the longtime director of the UFC, Bruce Connell, did pass away. And, you know, with both of what myself and Daniel do, me being on the radio side, Daniel on the television side, you know, a broadcast crew is they're an extension of your family. Me and my wife always say, like, we have our immediate family, and then we have our Tampa Bay Buccaneer family. And I thought Joe Rogan did a tremendous job at the beginning of the UFC broadcast with his tribute, and Mike Goldberg, tremendous job. Both of them, you could tell, were struggling to get through you know, their tributes of their longtime friend.
Oh, those are the two perfect people to deliver those tributes. I mean, two guys who have been at the UFC for such a long time. And yeah, you mentioned it, you know. When you are part of a broadcast team, you get very close to these people, because I think a big reason why is, I mean, the way I would describe a live broadcast is it's just you're driving a car that's on fire. You know, it is it's a nervous experience. There's potential to screw up at every second, both with what you say on air and all the technology surrounding it. So the attitude that is built around the team to put together a good product is just very – it's going to breed family-like atmosphere. And, you know, this guy is just a titan of the industry, a guy who was in the headsets of UFC commentators since, I believe when was his first event? God, I don't want to mess this up.
I know they said he did 300-plus events.
I know it's I want to say, let me see. I'm just going to actually Google it. Okay, yeah, that's what I thought it was. 1998 at UFC 17. You know, it's the guy in the headset. And Megan O'Leary had a nice tweet talking about how this is a guy who really gave her confidence, really watched what her work was, and gave her positive feedback and just feedback in general. And if you have someone like that who is just like someone who is very clearly a genius, and he is giving you attention time of day, and he really cares about you, and it's not just the commentators, it's the interviewees, it's everyone a part of the broadcast team. I mean, that just sounds like a dream producer to have, and it's really sad. They did a phenomenal job of honoring them, and I'm really glad Bellator honored him as well. And then, obviously, apparently his sons are in the industry with Viacom, I think. So really sad. It's just, you know, it sucks. And it kind of shows you how close a broadcast team is. You know, it's not something you think about when you just watch the fights, but give all the credit for these people who just do a great job of, you know, when we criticize production, I'm doing it with the thought of understanding that I am unbelievably impressed with the skills it takes to put on a production, because it is so damn hard. It's so damn hard to do a production, and it's also really freaking hard to commentate. Really hard. So
yeah,
when I offer criticism, it's just like feedback on what I think could be different or better. But I'm impressed by both Bellator and UFC when it comes to their broadcasts. I do think they're good.
It's, you know, and because of our experience, we understand the amount of work that goes into it. I mean, I can tell you this. I mean, look, setting up a radio broadcast is nothing compared to what, you know, TV people have to do. I mean, there are times where, you know, we're getting the equipment in, you know, here at home for Raymond James Stadium on a Friday before the stadium goes into lockdown, and the TV trucks are already there. And in today's age, I mean, they're setting up potentially 2 to 3 trucks, you know, to get the broadcast out there. I mean, it amazes me the amount of work that goes into it. And, you know, it's a family, and, you know, and I always try to make sure I never, you know, when there are, you know, screw ups that happen. I mean, look, we both know this in production of radio and television, man, it's going to happen, you know. And, you know, I ultimately tell people, like, you know, I get paid what I get paid, not for when everything is working right, is when things start breaking down. That's why I'm paid what I'm paid.
That is, and here's how big of an asshole I am. Now that we're talking about this, I want to bring up a production issue I had with the UFC pay-per-view. Now, I just want to bring this up because I'm just an asshole. But here's an issue I actually had with the production. I put it down on my iPhone. It was during the Struve-Andre Arlovsky fight, Jason. Struve got poked in the eye, and then you could hear on the broadcast, he said, I see stars, and I see white. He said that, and you could hear it on the broadcast. And then the referee brings the doctor in, and right, and that's such compelling new information of what's happening. And right when the encounter between the doctor and Struve is happening, they immediately show the replay, and the commentators talk over it. I don't know if they are allowed to show the doctor Stefan Struve meetup, but to me, that was I believe that they should have shown the interaction between Struve and the doctor, because you could hear on the broadcast that Stefan Struve said he saw stars. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, I'll go another one further about that. How about Mark Smith during the whole Lombard Dalloway thing covers up the mic so they can't hear what he's saying?
Mm-hmm.
that's a guy who understands I've got a microphone on me. I'm going to cover this thing up so you can't hear me and Herb's conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's a smart move, and that's a smart move for him. You know, I'm sure you're pissed if you're the broadcast, but can't criticize broadcasters for that, because that's just a guy who's not letting you in.
And now when it comes to this week in MMA, no UFC, no Bellator, but there still is a lot of MMA going on. On Friday, you've got ONE Championship 69 flyweight title on the line there. LFA 35 will be the return of Nick Newell. Bama 34 is going to be a welterweight title fight. ACB 82 down in Brazil, Thiago Silva is going to be headlining that card. Also, you've got UFC veterans Daniel Serafian, Chris Sociagos, and Wendell Oliveira on that card. Friday, you have Shamrock FC 303. I'm actually going to have some Shamrock interviews up on TheMMAReport.com this week. On Saturday in South Carolina, you have Warfare MMA 18, headlined by Austin Lane, a former NFL player that's transitioned over to MMA. I actually got an interview up on TheMMAReport.com. Also on late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, Pancrase 294 will be taking place. So, Daniel, still a ton of MMA to go on if people are, you know, need to get their MMA fix this weekend.
Yeah, man. It's the whenever there isn't a UFC or a Bellator, I think that's when every promotion has to put a show on, because that's whenever there's a little more oxygen in the MMA atmosphere.
Yeah, so a ton of MMA to go in there, so do appreciate everyone listening into the podcast. Do you want to thank Cody Stamen and Lindsey Jones for the time to be on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, we'll be back next week as we will get you ready for the UFC card. As, of course, they'll have the London card, our next Bellator event, not only till April the 6th. So we'll see if Bellator does make any news. Of course, if you do want to submit a question or comment to the podcast, you can do that on social media. At Jason_Floyd, or you can send me an email, jason@radioinfluence.com. If you do like this show and you're not subscribing, please do that. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out every Wednesday morning on radioinfluence.com.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I think I told you on this show that Baltimore police had a new police commissioner. You know, in the whole wake of the Freddie Gray thing, there was some shakeup in that department, and there were some officers convicted a few weeks ago on some corruption charges. And, you know, the department itself is in pretty bad shape. So this new commissioner, Daryl DeSosa, he has announced a strategy to root out corrupt cops, and it's basically integrity test. So it goes on to say, and I'm reading an article, but I'll just paraphrase it, police commanders might plant cash on a park bench to tempt officers, or they might call a district police station to test officers over the phone. I'm hoping that the analogy of planting cash on a park bench is just that, an analogy.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.